Hi, folks. Welcome back to Dose Makes the Poison, the ToxCast. My name is Kevin, and this is episode 5 of this show. It's time to talk about a historically used poison. I've got a bottle here with me tonight. You can probably hear it crinkling around here and shaking. There's some liquid in it, and I bet you want to know what it is. What is in this bottle? So if you want to know what's in this unlabeled bottle, I think it's time to find out. First, let's set the stage with an event that took place only a couple of years ago. I'm going to play a clip right now, and then I'll explain what happened.
This is the prosecution's appeal concerning Praljak in all other respects, affirms the sentence of 20 years of imprisonment subject to credit being given under Rule 101C of the rules for the period he has already spent in detention. Mr. Praljak, you may be seated.
Sudci, Slobodan Praljak nije ratni zločinac, s prijezirom odbacujem vašu presudu.
Stop, please. Please sit down.
Qu'il a bu un poison ce matin.
Yeah, okay, we suspend the... We suspend, please, the curtains.
Slobodan Praljak, a former general in the Croatian army and the Croatian Defense Council, was convicted of crimes against humanity and violations of war, or the Geneva Convention, during the Croat-Bosniak War that took place 1992 to 1995. So in 2013, he was actually convicted of these crimes. He received a 20-year prison sentence. So flash forward 4 years, 2017. He was at an appeals hearing in The Hague. At that appeals hearing, his conviction was upheld. So upon hearing this news, Praljak spoke, and you heard in that clip, "Judges, Slobodan Praljak is not a war criminal. With disdain, I reject your verdict." He then quickly produced that small bottle and drank from it and yelled, "What I am drinking now is poison." The judge stopped the hearing and medical professionals were summoned, and Praljak died a short while later. Well, what did he drink? What do you think he drank? What do you think was in that bottle? What do you think is in this bottle here that I have with me? Something potent. Something fast-acting. He died within minutes. He died pretty quickly after drinking the bottle. So it has to be potent, has to be fast acting, that's for sure. So it was later determined that Praljak committed suicide in The Hague in the International Court of Justice by drinking something called cyanide. And the video is really quite alarming. I have no idea how he got a hold of the cyanide or how he snuck it into The Hague. I just know it happened. So, what the heck is cyanide? Cyanide is also known as hydrocyanic acid, and it is a pretty small, simple molecule when you actually look at it. Its molecular formula is HCN, which means it is made up of one hydrogen, one carbon, and one nitrogen. It has a molecular weight of 27.03 grams per mole. Its boiling point is 25.6 degrees Celsius, or for us heathens in the United States who don't like using Celsius, that's 78.1 degrees Fahrenheit. A hydrogen cyanide was first isolated from the pigment Prussian blue, so another alternative name for cyanide is prussic acid. So in the 1800s, cyanide was given its modern name from the English word cyan, which means of shade of blue. So you have Prussian blue, cyan, shade of blue, cyanide. Historically, hydrogen and cyanide and its potassium and sodium salts. So like I said, hydrogen cyanide, which is HCN, potassium cyanide would be KCN. So K for potassium, C for carbon, N for nitrogen, or sodium cyanide, which is NaCN. Na is sodium, C, carbon, and nitrogen. So historically those, like I said, hydrogen cyanide, potassium cyanide, and sodium cyanide have been used as fumigants insecticides, metal polishes. It's used in gold and silver mining and electroplating solutions. Interesting thing about cyanide is cyanide vapor can be detected by a characteristic almond odor. It's estimated that up to approximately 50% of the human population can't detect this odor due to a recessive genetic trait. So, to those unlucky 50%, good luck. You'll never see it coming. Cyanide can be found in trace levels in the human body as a result of normal metabolic processes. So, you find it from normal metabolism. You also find it from eating a diet high in cyanogenic foodstuffs. So, these are things like lima beans, yucca, bamboo shoots, apple seeds, cherry stones, apricot and peach pits, bitter almonds. You can get cyanide produced in your body from those foods. Cyanide exposure can also occur from smoking cigarettes and burning plastic. Now, we talked about what cyanide is. So what are the pharmacodynamics of it? What does it do to your body? What does cyanide do to the body? So the cyanide ion, it's CN negative. It's a negative ion. It inhibits cellular respiration by binding to the iron atom in the cytochrome C oxidase enzyme, which is an enzyme involved in the last step of what we call the mitochondrial electron transport chain. Normally, during this step, molecular oxygen is converted into water, and this enzyme inhibition, which is irreversible, causes oxidative phosphorylation to halt, and the Krebs cycle is disrupted. So then that means adenosine triphosphate, or ATP, cannot be produced by the mitochondria in the cell. Pyruvic acid, formed during glycolysis, accumulates, and it's modified anaerobically to lactic acid. Lactic acid builds up and causes metabolic acidosis. Oxygen also builds up in tissues and alters the gradient for oxygen release from hemoglobin, which then produces cellular hypoxia. So in clearer terms, because I know that was pretty technical, so in clearer terms, cyanide disrupts the enzyme systems and metabolic pathways for which cells use to oxidize nutrients and produce energy. And in even shorter words, cyanide prevents cells from using oxygen to make energy. Tissues such as heart muscle and nerve cells expend all of their energy and they begin to die. So, and when a large enough number of these cells die, you die. The onset of symptoms of cyanide poisoning is very dependent on the route of exposure or administration. Hydrogen cyanide vapor is rapidly absorbed through inhalation. You inhale that pretty easily, it's rapidly absorbed in the body. An inhaled cyanide is a much greater risk than ingested cyanide. So potassium and sodium cyanide salt are more easily absorbed via oral ingestion, but are absorbed at lower rates. And if ingested orally, they are converted to hydrogen cyanide via the gastric acids in the stomach. So the lethal dose of hydrogen cyanide has been estimated to be around 100 milligrams, while the sodium and potassium salts, the lethal dose of those have been estimated to be around 200 to 300 milligrams. Acute intoxication symptoms of cyanide poisoning are central nervous system stimulation, headache, dizziness, tachycardia, or really fast heart rate, shortness of breath, rapid breathing, and vomiting. And then other symptoms that may occur after the initial intoxication include seizure, bradycardia, so low heart rate, hypotension, low blood pressure, coma, and cardiac arrest. Chronic administration of cyanide can lead to abnormalities of vitamin B12, folate, which is also named vitamin B9. It can lead to abnormalities of thyroid function, and it can lead to some very severe longer-term neurological and cardiovascular conditions. So that was the pharmacodynamics. What are the pharmacokinetics? What does the body do to cyanide once it gets in the body? Your body tries to detoxify the compounds and get them out of the body in many ways. And again, this is no different with cyanide. This is no different from any other toxin or poison. in cyanide's case, it's biotransformed to something called thiocyanate by the hepatic enzymes rhodanase and beta-mercaptopyruvate cyanide sulfur transferase. That is a mouthful of an enzyme, but that is the exact enzyme, beta-mercaptopyruvate cyanide sulfur transferase. In other words, enzymes allow a reaction to occur between the cyanide ion, remember the CN negative ion, and sulfur to transform that CN ion to a SCN ion, which that SCN ion is also called thiocyanate. It is then excreted into the urine as a waste product. And again, it is just the formation of a sulfur cyanide compound, and then it's excreted. So that's what your body does to detoxify cyanide. That is the main metabolic pathway from what cyanide is detoxified and excreted out of the body. But there are other metabolic pathways of cyanide, which include trapping of the cyanide by hydroxycobalamin via formation of vitamin B12, oxidation to formic acid and carbon dioxide. And cyanide can also be excreted via the lungs as unchanged cyanide. The elimination half-life of cyanide in whole blood is reported to be 0.7 to 2.1 hours. So remember, our rule in forensic toxicology is that a substance can be detected for 4 to 6 half-lives. So that means cyanide is detectable in blood for approximately 2 to 12 hours after exposure. So speaking of detection, in a forensic toxicology laboratory, we can detect and measure cyanide using techniques such as Conway microdiffusion with colorimetry, gas chromatography with electron capture, or even nitrogen selective detection, or mass spectrometry. Long names, I know, but there's different techniques we can use in the lab. We can also use something called liquid chromatography with fluorescence detection or mass spectrometry to detect it. But the point here is not to know the fancy long names for these things. The point is here is that cyanide is readily detectable by forensic scientists in a modern laboratory. So I may be talking about cyanide today, but do not get any ideas. And remember, like I said, you can be living normally with detectable amounts of cyanide in your system, in your body. Blood cyanide concentrations less than 0.25 milligrams per liter are considered normal. I mean, these could be from cyanogenic foodstuffs, these could be your normal metabolic processes, that sort of thing. But you can have detectable cyanide from your normal metabolism. But once concentrations get higher than 0.25 milligrams per liter, that's when things start to be problematic. And concentrations between 0.25 and 2 milligrams per liter are considered potentially toxic. And concentrations greater than 2 milligrams per liter are generally considered potentially fatal. So because of its ease of use and its toxicity, cyanide has, of course, appeared throughout history regularly as a poison in warfare, suicides, and homicides. You can see the use of cyanide in so-called cyanide pills in movies all the time. Think of the scenes where the villain, typically some sort of spy, gets caught, and instead of being captured and taken in for questioning or whatever it might be, he chews on a pill that was transfixed to the roof of his mouth or in a false tooth or something like that. He then begins to foam at the mouth and then dies within a minute. I mean, that's the typical movie representation of cyanide. But let's first talk about accidental deaths due to cyanide, because these have occurred. They occur pretty regularly throughout history. And these events are typically mass casualty type of catastrophes. These are serious events. So we've got to set the stage. Polyurethane is the material used in the manufacture of foam seating, insulation panels, foam seals, gaskets, wheels, tires, for things like roller coaster tires, escalators, shopping carts, and skateboards. It's also, polyurethane is also used in adhesives, surface sealants, carpet underlay, hoses, and even clothing like spandex. But the thing about polyurethane is that the polyurethane polymer is very combustible, and it can be easily ignited if exposed to a flame. So when it burns, the decomposition that occurs, the products that are formed are carbon monoxide, which I know I'm sure you've heard of, and cyanide. Other things are also produced, like nitrogen oxides and isocyanates, but the main things that are troublesome, carbon monoxide and cyanide. And acute cyanide poisoning can occur from inhalation of these fumes after polyurethane polymer has been combusted, is on fire. And this has definitely happened. So if you go back to 2003, it's about 17 years ago now, but at a rock show in Rhode Island involving the American hard rock band Great White. So yes, the Once Bitten, Twice Shy guys, this song. Pyrotechnics ignited some acoustic foam, the acoustic foam is made of urethane and polyurethane. So this acoustic foam was ignited when it was in the walls and ceilings surrounding the stage. A fire broke out on stage, and within 5 or so minutes, the entire club was engulfed in a black smoke, a really dark, thick smoke. 100 people actually died in this incident involving Great White's guitar player at the time, Ty Longley. 230 people were injured in this incident. So, flash forward a few more years, 2009, you look at, there was a nightclub called Lame Horse in Perm, Russia. A fire occurred there where burning plastic and polyurethane foam used in the construction of the inside of the club. The polyurethane foam and the plastic started burning, and basically that allowed for cyanide gas to be released, and 156 people ended up dying in this incident. And then another incident in Brazil, a few years later in 2013, a fire broke out at a nightclub named Kiss after a firework inside the club ignited the soundproofing foam, again, which was made with polyurethane, and it was in the ceiling and it ignited. 241 people died in this incident. As you can see, accidental mass casualties have occurred, and they have been from acute cyanide poisoning. Almost 500 people died in just those three incidents alone, just described a couple of minutes ago, from acute cyanide poisoning. I mean, there were other causes of death there, but in those incidents, 500 people died. But cyanide has also been known as a method to cause death on purpose. Those were accidental deaths. No one meant to die there. Here, people have used cyanide throughout history as a means to cause death. So, whether it's suicide or murder. And let's look at these sorts of deaths through time. We're not going to hit all of them, but we're going to hit the major ones that have gotten a lot of play in the media and in the news. So let's look at these. Beginning, it's rumored that cyanide played a role in Grigory Rasputin's assassination in 1916. He was allegedly given cyanide lace cakes and Madeira wine. I don't know if that's true. I have no idea, but allegedly it was. Hydrogen cyanide is infamous for poisoning. And the next part of this is probably the most infamous use of hydrogen cyanide. So hydrogen cyanide was originally marketed as the pesticide Zyklon B, but it was used in the gas chambers to murder people in the Nazi concentration camps during World War II. It is believed that around 1 million people were executed using Zyklon B, which is hydrogen cyanide. So, speaking of Nazi concentration camps and Nazis themselves, in the 40s, the Desert Fox, Erwin Rommel, who was a Nazi general, Eva Braun, the wife of Adolf Hitler, and then Nazi military commander Heinrich Himmler, they all committed suicide by cyanide liquid ingestion in the form of prussic acid. more deaths during Nazi times. The six children of Joseph Goebbels, who was the Nazi propaganda minister at the time, were murdered by first being injected with morphine by an SS dentist with the last name Kunz, and administered cyanide by a doctor, which I believe was Adolf Hitler's personal doctor, Ludwig Stumpfeger, which I know I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, but that was his personal doctor. They were injected with morphine, they were administered cyanide, and the six children of Joseph Goebbels died that way. Goebbels and his wife Magna also committed suicide by cyanide ingestion as well. And for some reason, the Nazis love their cyanide. It's an easy way to die. It's a horrible death. It's a horrible substance. And of course, the Nazis loved that substance. Flashing forward to 1974, Ronald Clark O'Brien gave potassium cyanide-laced pixie sticks to his son, daughter, and three other children on Halloween. The son ate the candy, while none of the other children did. And the boy died, of course. He ate cyanide-laced pixie sticks. So during the police investigation, it was determined that the boy had multiple life insurance policies taken out on him, and as well as O'Brien had taken life insurance policies on his other kids as well, which were worth substantial amounts of money at that time. And O'Brien was approximately $100,000 in debt. So the father was actually convicted of murder in 1975, a year later, and was executed via lethal injection in 1984. So this is one of those cases that have now inspired the media hysteria around the check your drugs for poison at Halloween time. You know those stories that pop up every September and October that say people are passing out drugs for Halloween. But this is one of those stories that kind of started at least kept it going, but I would say started that media hysteria. This wasn't a random crime, though. This was a crime targeted to one individual. He was going to kill his kid and collect on the life insurance policies. This wasn't a random person handing out candy to kids on Halloween. So don't believe that media hysteria. In 1978, in Jonestown, Guyana, 907 people died in a mass suicide attempt, an event led by Jim Jones. This is a pretty infamous event at Jonestown. Cyanide alongside diazepam, chlorhydrate, and promethazine were consumed via a grape-flavored beverage. People like to say it was a grape-flavored Kool-Aid. Kool-Aid kind of got its name thrown in there. It was some sort of Flavor-Aid beverage. The saying, don't drink the Kool-Aid, kind of originated, which it's not a really good phrase to use because these people were given this stuff. They weren't there to die. They were kind of forced to do this. So I don't like to use that phrase, but I do like to point out that this is where that phrase originated. In 1982, seven people died from a series of drug tampering cases in Chicago, Illinois. Tylenol branded acetaminophen had been laced with potassium cyanide by an unknown person. Several more deaths occurred in copycat crimes at the time. And the bad thing about this is that nobody was ever convicted of these homicides. They never found out who did this originally, which is scary to me. And then in 1985, so we're moving on more, serial killer Leonard Lake was arrested on weapons charges, auto theft charges, and fraud charges, and he actually died while in custody, because while in custody, he had ingested a cyanide pill he had kind of sewn into his own clothes, and it wasn't able to be found, and once he was in custody, he kind of chewed on that, and he killed himself. He was never convicted of any murder himself, but his accomplice at the time was convicted of 11 murders, which happened between 1983 and 1985. 3 years later, Stella Nickel was convicted of murdering her husband and another woman with cyanide-laced Excedrin tablets. So she received a 90-year prison sentence for her murder of husband and the other woman. In 1991, Joe Melling copied Stella Nichols' idea, and he contaminated capsules of Sudafed near his home in Washington in hopes of collecting on a $700,000 life insurance policy on his wife. He used the capsules to murder his wife and then disguised the incident as a mass murder by then putting that tainted product, that contaminated product that he put cyanide in, and he put it back on the store shelves. She actually survived that poisoning attempt, but two other people died from consuming the product off the shelf. And Joe was convicted in 93 and was sentenced to life in prison without possibility of parole. So he didn't get the person he targeted. He ended up killing two other people in the attempted cover-up. Cyanide has also been used in capital punishment in the United States, with the last gas chamber execution via cyanide occurring in Arizona in 1999. I was a senior in high school in 1999, and that's when the last gas chamber cyanide execution occurred. That just blows my mind that it was in use up until then. And then last I checked, which is very surprising to me, but cyanide still remains an option for capital punishment in 6 states in this great country of ours, the United States. It just boggles my mind that this is allowed in allowed in capital punishment. But I mean, it is a quick way to go, a quick way to kill somebody, but it is not a pleasant death. But in 2008, Michael Marin, a Wall Street trader and a lawyer, bought a mansion from a friend who lost it to foreclosure. So this guy lost the mansion. He had to foreclose on it. Michael Marin jumped in, his friend, decided to buy it. A year later, Marin decided that he was going to sell it via a lottery game. He'd make some profit from it and donate to some charity he chose. But the state of Arizona decided, nope, not going to let that happen. They decided that the lottery was illegal, and they said it's not going to happen on our watch, so they shut it down. The very next day, Marin called 911 and reported his home was on fire. And in 2012, Marin was convicted of arson. He deliberately set fire to his home, and he was eventually facing 7 to 21 years in prison for that arson. So he was found guilty of that arson, and after the guilty verdict was read in court, he consumed cyanide while in court, and then he collapsed to the floor convulsing. He died within minutes of ingestion. And there is actually a video of this available on YouTube and other places if you want to seek it out. It's not graphic in any way, shape, or form, but it does show Marin ingesting the substance, and then within a couple of minutes, he starts to make some weird noises, and then he collapses on the ground, and then people rush up to him. But there definitely is video of this online. I just watched it prior to recording this. In 2015, John McLemore committed suicide using potassium cyanide. And if you don't know who John McLemore is, he was currently recording a narrative for the investigative journalism podcast S-Town, otherwise known as Shittown. And the podcast series was still in production at the time. If you actually listen to that podcast, which I highly recommend it because it's a really good podcast series, but his death occurs at the end of episode 2. And all other episodes kind of detail what happened after his death while they explore his life and the character that was John McLemore. But he actually killed himself with potassium cyanide. So then in 2017, there was Pralyak's death in The Hague, which we talked about at the beginning of this episode. But over the last few weeks, there have been a couple of stories published where cyanide may have been a player. In the VN Express, which is taglined Vietnam's most read newspaper, a story was reported on January 2nd of 2020 that described the death of a nurse with cyanide as a key player. A nurse, and I'm going to butcher these names because I don't know how to pronounce them, but Nguyen T. Han in the northern province of the Thai Binh died after drinking cyanide-laced bubble tea, which was allegedly meant for her colleague. A woman named Lai T. Q. Trang was arrested for murdering Han. The story is reported that Trang wanted to kill her cousin, who also worked at that hospital, over something that they quoted as relationship disputes. I don't know if someone was messing around on somebody else or if something else was going on, but it was quote-unquote relationship disputes. On December 2nd, Trang bought 6 cups of bubble tea. She put cyanide into 4 of them and then had them delivered to the hospital as kind of a thank you gifts from patients. Trang's cousin wasn't at work that day, so the tea was put in a refrigerator, and the next morning Han drank one of the cups and died. 2 of the other cups were also drank, but they were the unpoisoned ones, and those employees were fine. Han actually got a hold of one of the poisoned cups, because, remember, she had 6 cups, but she only put poison in 4 of them. And this is a ongoing case. It's in process. Again, I will look for updates on this as time kind of flows in 2020. But I thought it was interesting that this case just popped up. So as I was looking at that case, another case popped up within a couple of days. And this was reported at the beginning of January as well, that the first charges against a woman in India, whose name is Jolly Joseph, were brought by the courts in India. Jolly allegedly poisoned 6 members of her family over a 14-year period, and it happened between 2002 and 2016. This specific case was related to the death of her husband, Roy Thomas, in 2011. So allegedly, and I say allegedly because it's an ongoing case, a friend of Jolly's got a hold of cyanide from a goldsmith, and remember, cyanide is used in the mining of gold and silver. The friend gave it to Jolly, and then she used it to poison her husband. And it seems that the Indian authorities are actually preparing to file charges in the other 5 deaths as well. And again, as this is an ongoing case, I'll be looking out for more updates in the future. But these were just 2 really, really recent cases where cyanide may be a player. So in conclusion, cyanide is a rapidly acting substance that causes death via disruption of cellular respiration and results in hypoxia and cardiac arrest. It basically stops your body processes so it doesn't produce energy and you can die. It's found as hydrogen cyanide or as a potassium or sodium salt typically. It's been effectively used throughout history as an agent to murder people, has been implicated in suicides, and it has been a factor behind accidental deaths and mass casualty events like fires in clubs and music venues. So I hope you learned a little bit about cyanide today. You might have known a lot of that, you might have not known, but cyanide is a classic poison, it's a historical poison, and it's one of my favorites. And as for what's in this bottle, let's hope it ain't cyanide. You can find this podcast through all of the typical podcasting apps. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Overcast, Pocket Cast. Wherever you find your podcast, you can find Dose Makes the Poison, the ToxCast. If you want to get in contact with me, you can find me on Twitter on my personal account, is at ForensicToxGuy, or the show, at ToxCast. Or on Facebook at the Dose Makes the Poison podcast page. Give it a like, give it a follow. You can reach me via email if you would like, dosemakesthepoisonpodcast@gmail.com. And if you like what you are hearing in this podcast, please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. If you use that app for your podcast listening, it only takes a literal minute to leave a review. Any feedback is much appreciated. Retweet or share the show to your science-minded friends and your non-science-minded peeps. I am trying to spread this show around if I can as much as possible. I'll buy you a Coke or your beverage of choice the next time I see you in the non-internet world. So, until next time, my friends, much love to all of you, and always remember, never practice toxicology in a vacuum.